might go awry, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, do consider letting them know you like this show.
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. You don't need to be a scientist to hold that lamp. Look for evidence. Keep on thinking. Trimberger.org.
Hi, I'm Drew Nelson, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
Hey boys and girls, if you like songs that go from this to something like this, then you should check out my show, Lights Out on WHFR Dearborn, hosted by yours truly, Mr. Camo. Playing the best in techno, trance, industrial, rave, drum and bass, breaks, and everything that involves electronic. So even though it's the middle of the day, we can still turn the lights out and have a party. Every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. on the only station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. And our guest today is Kevin Estrella. Kevin is the lead guitarist for the instrumental rock band Pyramids on Mars, presently residing in Ontario, Canada. He feels much of his original compositions are inspired by forces outside of his own mind, possibly telepathically inspired. Kevin has had his own personal UFO sighting and has shared that experience with the MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, who has deemed his report to be of unknown origin. Although there are many celebrities, be it in the world of Hollywood or music, that have had UFO sightings or alien abduction experiences, few are willing to go public with their accounts for fear of risking their careers through criticisms by their fans. And so I have to give kudos to Kevin for doing so. So let's get Kevin Estrella on the line. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Oh, thank you for having me on, David. Very glad to be here.
I appreciate you. In fact, you got in touch with me, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you told me before we started here that you've been doing a lot of radio interviews. Is that as to your music or as to UFO phenomenon? A little bit of both. What?
Actually, a little bit of both. I've been on several UFO radio talk shows, including Fringe and The Buzz, And I'm trying to think of where else I've been. I actually was contacted by Art Bell's producer on the weekend.
Oh, really?
And I'm in serious consideration to be on his show.
He's very late at night. Well, yeah. Are you on the east side of Canada or left side of Canada? Where are you?
We're Eastern Central Time, so
he comes on
New
late.
York time.
Oh, yeah, he comes on late, doesn't he? But you're used to being up late doing gigs, right?
Actually, not so many shows currently right now. I've been spending a lot of my time promoting through radio and magazine interviews. Been very busy that way. Yeah. I just released my second CD, Echo Cosmic, and I've been very busy promoting that.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes up a lot of my time. You know, it's funny. You think it, being a musician, that you'd spend majority of your time playing or performing. When you're a solo artist like myself, I probably spend only 10% of my time actually picking up a guitar, and 90% of my time I wear my manager and promoters and marketing hat.
Okay.
But these are the things that you need to do.
Right, right. Now you say solo. I saw a video of you, and you had another guitarist with you.
Yes, my brother plays bass.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So before we get to the UFO side, this is actually a music station, so we do have talk shows, but actually a music station, so it kind of works out well. So before we get to the other side, tell our listeners a little bit about your music. How long have you been involved with that?
I am Pyramids on Mars, mystical music for the mystical red planet. I'm very much in the same genre as guitarist Joe Satriani. I'm a instrumental rock guitar, basically what you call my style of music. Yeah, but I have a bit of a different twist on things in regards to my approach with music. Joe comes more from the school, like the blues school, and I come more from the classical school of Yngwie Malmsteen and the classical, classical influence. So that's my angle on my approach with music. You can hear all my music at www.pyramidsonmars.com. And Pyramids on Mars has been growing tremendously in popularity over the last several years. I released my debut CD in 2013, and it's just been going more and more, bigger and bigger all the time.
That's
great. I have radio play in Canada, the U.S., U.K., Netherlands, Germany, Brazil, and it's growing. And with the release of my new CD, Echo Cosmic, it's really taking people by storm. A lot of people are referring to me in the same category as David Gilmour, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, in that kind of range.
Now you have the genre for this radio station, I'll tell you that much. I saw on your site that you deal with the Mini Moog synthesizer. Now, to show my ignorance, tell us about the Mini Moog synthesizer.
Sure. I guess it depends on what side of the pond you are and how it's pronounced. Bob Moog, he created these synthesizers back in the 70s. The Moog synthesizer became a very popular synthesizer. It has such a warm analog sound to it, and bands like Rush and Pink Floyd use them predominantly in their music. So, like, I really, really love the warm sound of the Moogs, and you also hear them a lot in older horror movies and stuff like that, or sci-fi TV shows, because they just they have this warm analog resonancy to them. And I just like that quality of sound. And it sounds like something that you'd hear if you landed on Mars and were looking around. So I really wanted to capture it. I'm really influenced by bands like Rush and Pink Floyd. I wanted to incorporate that sound into rock music.
Didn't Moody Blues also use that?
Most likely.
Yeah.
Most likely.
So. I'm guessing.
Funny you mention them. They're another band who have been... they are definitely experiencers.
Ah, is that right? Oh, yeah. I just saw them 6 months ago. They were at a casino here in Michigan. And,
Oh, yeah?
So I had to go see Moody Blues because I love them, and I love casinos. Shame on me. But anyway, I had a lot of fun, and they were great. When are you going to be in the Michigan area, or have you been?
I haven't been in the Michigan area. I play mostly in the Golden Horseshoe area, which surrounds the Toronto and Niagara Falls area.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to start taking music outside of that area in due time, mm-hmm. and I will definitely be doing that as Pyramids on Mars gets bigger. Yeah. This is the area that I play live and most of the time, but eventually, once I get to a next level, then I will be taking Pyramids on Mars on the road.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about the Echo Cosmic. Is there a message in there, or is there a message in all your music, or just do your thing? What?
It's actually multi-layered, because when I was writing Echo Cosmic, I had a lot of, at the time, writing music that was inspired by a lot of different bands. And so I took this, I took a lot of my music to reflect on bands who were influencing me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a lot of different genres and wrote in the style of certain artists who I wanted to pay homage to. But the album also was taking on its own theme. When I thought of Echo Cosmic, I was thinking of a theme of the Earth and our loneliness in this universe.
Echo Cosmic,
the theme of that is basically, we've been projecting TV radio signals for the last 100 years.
Mm.
Some of these signals are leaving the Earth and they're traveling out in this kind of this cosmic echo, like in a pool.
Right.
And so in the way we are leaving a footprint, and technically some alien civilizations should be able to pick up these micro radio frequencies.
Mm.
So it was, that was the creation of, the theme of this album.
Right.
And I try to tie these songs together to have the same, to have a oneness of, these are my influences of the bands who I want to pay homage to, but I also want to pay this message of, this is kind of where we are,
right,
as human beings.
Right. Now, you're kind of talking like SETI. You're familiar with SETI, Search for
Extra. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I really see these guys, Seth Sobchak, or what is his name? Seth, anyway, the guy that runs the joint. I see them sitting in this building with, the ceiling overhead and listening for echoes, sounds, signals, sending out signals while a UFO hovers over the ceiling, over the rooftop. And it just seems humorous to me. The guy, Seth, will not, Sobchak, I guess his name is. He will just not admit that there's any evidence of the UFO phenomenon here on Earth, but that they're sending out signals. Now, possibly and probably, they are sending out signals, but I often say that us sending out signals, I think the technologies are way beyond ours in that, and it would be trying to, receive smoke signals on your BlackBerry, or your smartphone. What do you think?
Well, honestly, I think it's a complete waste of time anyway, because they're already here.
Okay.
I mean, why are you trying to send a long-distance phone call when they're outside your front door? I don't get that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying, yeah. So, okay, so let's head over in that direction. What makes you think they're here? Tell us about your own UFO sighting.
Well, I have studied the UFO phenomenon for the last 15, 20 years, and I've been very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of research in the different areas of the whole UFO phenomenon. I really got interested back in the early 90s with when I first heard about Bob Lazar and he was talking about alien propulsion systems from Area 51. Mm-hmm. And then also at the same time, around that time, there's a lot of UFO abductions taking place. So I was reading books by Bud Hopkins on that. But I just was more and more fascinated and spent more time researching. And I wanted to, when they created Pyramids of Mars, I wanted my music to reflect that as well, to help educate people in regards to the real alien phenomena on our planet. So to me, it was all tied together, and the Pyramids of Mars was a perfect theme for my music, because my music is so spacey and sounds like it's from another planet. And I wanted to incorporate that as a visual and a message to the world to help raise consciousness and awareness. Mm. Little did I know that there was other entities who were in full approval of what I'm doing. Mm. And that happened last year, August 21st, 2014, at 10:30 at night.
How's that?
Now, my whole life, I had always hoped that I would have my own UFO experience. It was always a dream to be able to see my own, because I was fortunate to meet five or six people in my lifetime who were experiencers who had seen craft. Mm. And then it happened to me last year, and my reaction to it was not what I was expecting. Mm. I was actually upset for 2 weeks because I just didn't know what it was I had seen. It completely turned my world upside down.
It does. It does. Tell us, describe this sighting to us, what it looked like, where were you?
I was, I went onto my deck, which is, faces south in Hamilton, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And within seconds of me stepping onto my deck, to the right of me, my neighbors have this big tree, and this object appeared from behind the tree. And at first I thought it was a meteor, because it was orange and red, and it looked like it was on fire. It had this trail on top of it and swirling behind it. But then I realized that this thing was just moving way too slow for a meteor. It was moving at maybe the speed of a small plane or a helicopter. And it was at a constant speed. It had no sound. But then when it finally came into my full view, I noticed that it was a disc. It was a glowing orange and red disc. And it looked like it was on fire, because it just had this stream that was going across the top of it and streaming out the back as it moved across the sky. And I'm going, what the heck is that? I didn't know what I was looking at. But the other crazy thing that was about it that was so strange and odd, and I didn't even clue into this until 2 weeks later, because I knew there was something else about it that was really unearthly-like. It was two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me, what do you mean by two-dimensional? The best way to visualize this thing is picture a solar eclipse. A solar eclipse is two-dimensional. It looks like a hole in the sky.
Right.
And that's what this thing looked like. It looked like a hole in the sky. Mm. You take a solar eclipse, turn that into a disc shape, color it orange and red like tie-dye, and then the surroundingness of the sun behind you, that's kind of more like the plasma stream was. And that's the thing, it was covered in plasma. I discovered that it was, this fiery look was actually, it was a plasma. It was completely covered in plasma.
Mm-hmm.
And as it moved across the sky, it moved towards the south. And as its tail got farther, like towards me, it got darker in appearance and darker in appearance, and appeared to have this white vortex that was swirling across in front of it. And I was thinking, is that what gave it that glowing look? So I didn't know what the heck it was I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So I filed a complete report with MUFON and the UFO reporting station in the United States in Washington, and I hadn't heard anything since. I didn't hear nothing.
I thought I'd read that they had declared that it was unknown.
That was what I found out this year.
Oh, okay. Oh, you heard nothing at the time. How far away?
I didn't hear.
How far away were you? How far away was the object from you? Would you?
It was actually very close. It was probably only maybe a kilometer away and maybe 1,000 feet to 1,500 feet in the air.
Okay.
It was very close. Very close. So and the thing was is that it traveled only the distance of my backyard.
What
it appeared from behind this tree, it traveled the distance of my backyard, and then made its way south. So that's another important thing to this similar sighting.
Did it ever, at any point, did it accelerate, slow down, hover?
Or did same it, speed.
Same
exact
speed.
Same speed. Same speed, no sound. Just complete silence.
Okay.
So this is glowing disc that was moving across the sky.
Okay.
And I'm just like freaked out. I didn't know what to make of it. It wasn't until after it disappeared when I finally started to figure out what I thought it was I was looking at.
Okay.
So then comes this year, and in June I found out that there was the Alien Cosmic Exhibition taking place in Brantford, Ontario. And I thought, okay, I'm going to check this out. And I look on the internet and see what the presentations are, because a whole bunch of top ufologists from North America were presenting, and I recognized Stanton Friedman right away. And then I saw Grant Cameron was doing a presentation, and his presentation, this is what completely freaked me out, was on UFOs, aliens, musicians, consciousness, and the connection. And I was just like, oh my God, this is all about me. I've got to go to this. It's like I was being called. It's like when Jesus calls for his calls with disciples, you go. That's right. What I felt like. I felt like, oh my God, I'm on a mission here to find out what the heck is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get there, and just before the presentation to Grant, like I saw Grant, and I went over to him, and I handed him my CD. He looked down at it, and he says, "We got to talk." And I'm like, yeah, we definitely do.
You handed your music CD?
Yes, my first CD.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Pyramids of Mars.
I see. Go ahead.
I gave it to him as based on my business card. So I saw his presentation, and his whole presentation was on how many other musicians have been in contact with extraterrestrials and how extraterrestrials are using musicians to help raise consciousness.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And how many musicians are talking about UFOs in their music, or aliens, or who are experiencers, and who are also seem to be getting downloads of their music through, which seems to come from another consciousness.
And when you say downloads, you mean telepathic messages?
Kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah,
or the music seems to come from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm writing my music, I always am trying to tap into this type of energy field, too. Because I started to realize more and more that when I'm writing my music, I never really feel like I'm writing it. I always end up feeling like I'm an artist who's been given a blank canvas, and I have I've drawn a basic black and white outline, and then I'm just there a kid, color by numbers, and just adding color to what's obviously the color is supposed to be on the page to create a picture, and then the song is done. I feel very passive when I write my music.
Okay. Hold that thought, Kevin. I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. 30 years. We're just getting started over here. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Kevin Estrella. And he is the lead guitarist, lead instrumentalist for the rock group Pyramids on Mars. And I wanted to mention, Kevin, you were talking about other musicians that have had sightings. I made a little list here, not very long, so... actors, musicians, and famous people who have seen and reported UFOs. Billy Ray Cyrus, these are actors. Billy Ray Cyrus, Will Smith, Russell Crowe, Dan Aykroyd, boxer Muhammad Ali, of course, Presidents Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter. And as to musicians, John Lennon, Mick Jagger, and Sammy Hagar of the band Van Halen. And of course,
that's right.
And now, of course, Mr. Kevin Estrella. So please go ahead with your story about Grant Cameron.
Sure, absolutely. But what Cameron was talking about was that the musician or the aliens are using musicians to help raise consciousness of the alien presence, because people are a lot more open-minded to these type of subjects when they're listening to music or through music, because it's reaching a younger age where people have not, you know, made their decision in regards to what the world is. This is Grant's theory. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can agree from that, because usually by the time people get to, you know, 20, 25, they've already made up their mind whether they're, you know, they are religious or an atheist. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to make them change their mind.
Right.
In regards to their own beliefs, they've created a paradigm, and they live in that box.
Right.
It's hard for people to break that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in regards to what happened with me and where my story starts to get really crazy, is one of the booths that were set up in one of the off rooms, I saw MUFON was there, and I saw Stu Bundy, who had taken my report. And so I walked up to them, and I took out my drawings that I had made of my sighting and just put them there on the table. He turns around and looks at them, looks down at them, looks up at me and says, "Oh, my God, I'm so glad you're here. We're doing a presentation on you tomorrow."
On you?
And I'm just like, what?
thanks for the heads up.
You guys in a year, and you're doing a presentation on me?
Really?
Yeah. And so he said, "Yes, your story is one of the most credible cases that we've come across."
Oh,
you know, he says, like, most of the time we're able to debunk things as being a star or whatever. You know, this guy, yours, you know, it's one of the better cases that we've come across.
Now,
and then he started asking me questions about the craft itself, and he said about, you know, because I said it was covered in plasma, and then when I described how it was looking as it got further away and how that changed, it's, you know, it changed like it was become a black object with this white stream thing. And he says, "Yeah, that is typical, you know, physical properties of something that would be covered in plasma, because you can only see plasma from certain angles. Other angles, you cannot see it. Therefore, what you saw was definitely a physical craft in the sky." So then I asked the big question. He says, "Okay, this is amazing. You know, I mean, I live in the city of Hamilton, the city of 500,000 people. How many other people reported it?" And he said, "That's the thing. You're the only one."
I've heard of that before.
And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's impossible.
What time of day?
You know,
what time of
night? It was 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people walking their dogs,
certainly,
people driving their cars.
Right.
It was right over, you know, the city. It was 40 or 50 feet in diameter, this disc, and it was, you know, on fire going across the sky. How can nobody else see this thing?
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no possible way.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I was not hallucinating, because how can I make this up? You know, the way I describe this craft, there's never anything. I haven't even seen anything like that in movies.
Hmm.
I've never seen anything that's two-dimensional. Have you ever seen anything that's two-dimensional?
No. Not really, no.
No. Yeah. It's like, how do you explain this? And so I'm really freaked out now. I have no idea what to make of it. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And so I meet up with Grant, and he says, "Yeah, I want to meet with you and talk with you." And I met with him on Sunday, and he said he had gone to MUFON's presentation and saw my whole thing. And he says, "Come have lunch with me." So I'm like, okay, great, okay. And so we go and sit down. I tell him my whole story again, like I told you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just looks at me like it was nothing. He says, "Yeah, Kevin, this is not uncommon. This happens all the time."
Mm-hmm.
Where there's only one person who sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Yeah, the same thing happened to John Lennon. You know, in the middle of New York City, you know, this alien craft, it was close enough where he said he could throw a brick at it. He's standing naked on his balcony, and he's yelling and screaming at all his neighbors to open up their doors and take a look at this flying saucer that's going down the river."
And all they saw was a naked John Lennon.
Yeah, naked John Lennon.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he was standing naked on his balcony, like I guess he normally does with his new girlfriend. And and there was nobody else around. And his girlfriend, you know, just claimed, oh, they must all be down to the Hamptons, which Grant had a chance to talk to her and asked her, you know, about that. And she says, yeah, it doesn't really make any much sense, does it?
Are we talking
about... So
here's
John Lennon in the middle of, you know, the only person in New York City who saw a flying craft.
Yeah. Are we talking about Yoko Ono?
No. There's another... It was his girlfriend after Yoko Ono.
Oh. Okay.
I can't remember her name, though.
No.
No.
No, Yoko but, really sticks out in everyone's mind. Huh?
Yeah, it wasn't Yoko Ono. It was somebody else.
Mm.
But Grant gave a couple more examples of other people who he's spoken to who... You know, they'll be chased down a highway by an alien, you know, by a craft.
Mm-hmm.
And when Grant stops him and says, this highway is just normally a busy highway. And they'll say, oh, yeah, it's busy all the time. You know, like there's tons of cars always. He says, well, all the time, how many, you know, were there cars?
None.
And they're like, that's a funny thing. There weren't any cars.
Right.
There was like nobody.
Right.
And we were driving for miles and miles. So as Grant's saying, these aliens have this ability of being able to shut everything down around to just have a person who they want to, them to see them.
Right.
They have this ability to be able to do this, and it's really strange. And he said, Kevin, you know, these aliens, you saw this thing because they want you to see it.
Right.
And I was the only one who saw it because the Monday, the weekend after the ACE convention, I was on Rob McConnell's show, I think it's called the X Zone or the Y Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were talking, he told me that before the show, he went on to all the databases that they use to search for alien-like sightings, basically. And he said there is absolutely no report of any anomalies whatsoever the night that I saw my sighting. So as far as the physical records go, I was the only one.
And this is the only one you've ever had in your life?
Actually, no, it's not.
Okay.
I had another experience back in 2000 that happened up in Huntsville in cottage country in Ontario that I still can't really explain what happened, but there was something that happened. I was with my bandmates at the time, and we went down to the lake to go for a swim. And we're in the water, and it's late at night, and it's 1,000 stars in the sky, and it's a full moon, and we're just admiring the stars. And then all of a sudden, it was I don't know whether it was the moon or whether it was something the same size as the moon. All of a sudden, it was on fire and was coming towards directly for us, like right at us.
Huh.
And I could hear the sound. I could hear this. Like I could hear it coming towards us, and I thought we were going to die.
Wow.
But I don't know what it was. And all of a sudden, swoosh, it was gone. It just vanished. I have no recollection. I don't remember blinking. I don't remember seeing it disappear. It's like I have a memory loss, and I don't know what happened. And I know that we saw something because we all went, whoa, what the heck was that? And I don't know. I mean, Matt, who was with me at the time, he's a huge believer too, and he's an experiencer. He's seen at least four alien craft. He became a full-time crop circle researcher after our old band broke up. He's very much involved in the whole alien phenomena. He hasn't stopped doing his research. I don't know what happened that night. I don't know. I went under hypnosis, and we were still not able to find anything more. I have no more memory of that incident. I have no idea.
Do you think you had missing time experience at that time?
I don't know.
Mm.
I'm not too sure.
Mm.
Because my other friend, Rick, he was in the sauna at the deck on the dock when the incident happened. It's kind of funny that it's only me and Matt that this incident happened to. So I don't know if there is missing time. And we all have this vague memory of what happened, like a blurred memory. We didn't even talk much about it because we just don't really remember what happened.
Okay, so this object came out of the sky, correct?
It was in the sky. It was very close.
Hmm.
it was definitely within the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I could hear the sound. It was really close. It was coming right for us, though. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going across the sky. It was coming right for us, like it should have killed us.
How close?
And that's what I can't figure out.
How close would you say it got to you before it vanished?
I'd say within, 4,000 to 5,000 feet.
So could it have been a meteor?
If it was, it should have killed us.
Yeah, but I mean, it would have, but if you could hear that whoosh, no, it would not have been a meteor.
I mean, I could hear the flames. I could hear this, yeah. That sound. I could hear that coming right at us. Uh-huh. And then it just stopped. It vanished.
Wow. See, that doesn't make any sense. Because, I'm an investigator for MUFON myself. So I try to, our first job is to rule out any prosaic answers, Mm-hmm. So what you're describing could be a meteor if it's going sideways, But not if you see flames. I mean, you see a light. You know what a meteor looks like, shooting star, and then it extinguishes because it just burns itself out. At the same time, it doesn't get so close that you can hear that fire. You can hear that whoosh. It doesn't get that close. If it does,
and that's a strange thing. That the only thing I can remember about it was that. There was no tail because it was coming right for us. It was like the moon was, like if you picture the moon on fire and the flame shooting behind it directly. Mm. And that's what I remember. It was coming, it had to be coming right for us because the flames were all shooting right behind it. It looked like the moon was on fire and somebody was, blowing wind against it, so the flames were shooting behind the moon. Mm. Yep. And I could hear it coming towards us, and then all of a sudden it just vanished.
Another fire in the sky. You're familiar with that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Travis Walton. Yeah.
Travis Walton story?
Yeah. We had Travis Walton on the show, and then just a couple months ago we had Jennifer Stein on the show that has done a documentary on Travis Walton, with Travis Walton, and a couple of the other guys that were in there. They've never changed their story.
But, are you familiar with Chris Bledsoe's story?
No, I'm not.
Well, you're going to be.
Okay, let's hear that one.
Yeah, his story is actually being turned into a major Hollywood motion picture as we speak.
Oh.
And I believe Mel Gibson is starring in it.
Okay, so you kind of can't tell us about that?
I can tell you a little bit. Chris Bledsoe. Grant Cameron has met with him many, many times. Grant is very excited about Chris Bledsoe's story, and I've actually had an opportunity to speak to Chris. We're now friends, and we follow each other on Facebook, and I talked to him last week, and the stuff he's told me is absolutely incredible. Hmm. It's the next biggest thing.
Wow.
His experience, he saw three alien craft. He met with beings. Their alien children came out and were let to play around, and they looked like they're short, three feet tall, skin like glass, and have red glowing eyes.
Jeez.
But he was given information by these beings. It happened over a whole pinch of period of time, but his story is so crazy because it's the way it sounds. Like, it sounds almost like the end of the world with the way they came down and they were trying to drive their truck away and get away and stuff. And the aliens had surrounded their house and they just couldn't escape these beings. Hmm. There's a bunch of crazy stuff that happened with their story.
He was given
information by them, and he didn't want to talk about it for a long time.
Yeah. Was this in Kentucky? Did this happen in Kentucky years ago?
Is it Kentucky? Not Kentucky, no.
Tennessee, somewhere down there. How long ago did this happen, do you know?
The first time was in 2007.
Oh, okay, so this is a different story, because I remember one, they, of course, media made fun of it, that something happened where these this craft landed, these alien beings, similar to what you're describing, got out, and they were all over the this farmhouse. And, of course, you know, now the skeptics always say, well, this only happens at a farmhouse or down south with Bubba and that type of thing. And then,
yeah.
You know, we're not talking about President Reagan, President Carter, we're not, you know, all that.
Yeah.
People in big cities. But at any rate, okay, sorry about that. I've got off course. Back to Bledsoe. What happened to him?
Well, Chris Bledsoe, you know, there's a lot to his story that, you know, will come out in the movie, but he was given information that he's, you know, that he didn't want to share. I'm not going to, you know, give the whole story because I don't, you know, I'm only getting pieces of it, right. But I can tell you that the things are still happening with him.
Mm-hmm.
They still have met with him. And I asked him, like, you know, when you were on board the craft, did they ever, you know, did you get to fly it? And he said, yes, they let me fly it.
I've heard that before, too.
Said, really? Because, well, I know how you fly. You fly with your mind. You know, you got to be hooked up, you know, because it's a whole consciousness thing.
Yeah.
I said, well, what's it feel like? He says, it's like being an exhilarated, thrilled child.
You know,
he says you move around and there's like, you don't even feel like you're moving. It's like you know, inertia is completely zero.
Right. My latest book, and I'm not saying this to plug it, but it's called A New Heaven, A New Earth. And it's a science fiction, kind of the UFO phenomenon from the aliens' point of view. And I made up how do they fly these things? And that's what I came up with, was that they hook their minds, their brains up to, you know, put a little headset on, and their minds control the ship. And that's pretty much what you're saying here, isn't it?
That's how they do it.
Huh.
In fact, actually, the Moody Blues, they've been abducted, and they write songs about the ship with no wheel. You know, the steel ship with no wheel. And that's it. It's a consciousness thing. And Grant Cameron has spoken with many people who have been on board the ship, and they all say the same thing. You know, that's when finally realized that, you know, that's where Grant all of a sudden put everything together, that this, you know, whole UFO alien phenomenon is a consciousness thing. They are at a much higher level of consciousness than us. They know that the universe is all one. Everything is connected.
Right.
And even their, you know, their ships are alive, and they're in connection with them.
And I've heard that before, too, is that those ships appear to be biological beings. I need to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with musician and UFO witness, experiencer, I'm going to say witness, Kevin Estrella of the rock band Pyramids on Mars. And, back to Bledsoe there. That's good. You met him? You talked to him? And
I talked to him for an hour and a half about three Sundays ago.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of religious connotations as well of things that he's shared with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody asks, you know, is the Bible real? Absolutely, 100%.
Uh-huh. It's just a matter of interpretation, right?
That's the key. He was told some things, that he was given some information.
Right. All of these religions, all over the world, it's all off the same basic premise, but just different rationalizations, different interpretations. It doesn't mean that. It means this. It doesn't mean this. It means that. Wait a minute. You know? And is it possible that these, what we term as aliens, are coming here to kind of set this world straight?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that they want us to believe, but just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They're slowly, spoon feeding us information for the world to gain its own awareness and consciousness, because it's just too great of a shift in people's
paradigm. Yeah.
Paradigm. Yeah. To be able to live and live with the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it is, because I meet so many different people who are at different levels of acceptance. And everybody, we are full of very rational human, intelligent human beings who can interpret things very differently, or see them as a threat, or see them as something to be exploited for technology. Mm. There's so many things, and they are trying to raise awareness of their existence so that we can live with ourselves, so to speak. Mm. But it's also their philosophy in regards to how they live. They're socialists. They're not capitalists. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the corporations are not going to be very happy.
Right.
Because they believe in oneness. Mm. And that, everybody's like a leaf on a tree, that we're all connected.
Right.
And corporations see it as, this is a tree that we can cut down and sell.
The
two philosophies
corporations
don't match.
Corporations want to be the trunk. Right, of the tree.
They want to be the trunk. They want to be the ones who, supply the tree with food and charge a fee for it.
Uh-huh. Oh, well. What can I say?
People want disclosure. It may not happen for another 100, 200, maybe 500 years. We don't know.
It seems
like these extraterrestrials are not on any schedule.
No. And I think the government as well, governments of the world, although U.S. is lacking terribly, but the governments are spoon-feeding us too, giving us a little bit of information at a time, letting this leak out, letting that leak out. It used to be when a leak happened, they'd deny it, or they'd put out false information and then debunk it and show that it was false, and then say, well, if this is false, well, then this other must be false, even though it was true, just to confuse us.
Well, it's kind of like when the X-Files is out, and they kept saying about the best place to hide a truth is between two lies.
Yeah, yeah. Or in plain sight. In plain sight.
Right in plain sight.
Yeah.
So they can just have deniability.
So, yeah, that was one of my questions to you, do you think that there'll be official disclosure in your lifetime?
I don't know. But I know that from my sighting and what happened with me, and that they have focused on me, them by flying by my house and me being the only one seeing it, they have given me basically the affirmation that I've needed to continue to do what it is that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that I am on the right path, and that they are watching. Mm-hmm. Chris Bledsoe has told me that this is just the beginning for me, that they will make contact again.
Mm-hmm.
It never ends. So I know that they're going to be back, and I'm probably going to be meeting with them in a much more formal way.
How do you feel about that
prospect? I'm ready. I'm finally ready for it.
Okay. Well, you thought you were before, and then you said, I was like upset for a couple of weeks, but...
I was upset for a couple of weeks. Yeah. I was completely freaked out, because I kept going to the back of my mind and replaying, trying to make sense of what it was that I saw.
Yeah.
That it could have been something physical or something here on Earth.
Right.
But there was too many things about it that were unearthly. I mean, right. Covered in plasma, two-dimensional.
Yeah.
It was like... What the heck was that?
So do you feel that you talk about your music being a blank canvas? Do you feel that all or most of your music is really inspired by something outside of yourself, possibly extraterrestrial or other dimensional?
I always, let's see how to put this. My greatest guitar influences are like David Gilmour and Jimi Hendrix and know, Joe Satriani, and I really, my music all stems from a feeling and a consciousness, and I try and tap into this oneness feeling that I once felt when I reached an enlightenment period back when I was in university, when I was listening to Jimi Hendrix music one time. And I remember the exact moment when I felt like I connected to the universe. It was incredible. And I felt so amazing. And it was like when I was listening to Jimi Hendrix live at Monterey, and it was the Foxy Lady, and just as they hit that one first guitar note and the guitar solo, I was air guitaring, and all of a sudden, boom, this energy feeling went through the top of my head, and it felt like the back of my mind expanded in consciousness, and I felt like I was one with the universe. And I've always been striving to get back to that state of mind. And whenever I write music, I always let it has to come flowing, and it has to come from somewhere else. And anything that I write, I try and let it come through me, through inspiration, through letting that energy feel come through you. And you end up feeling like you're not even writing the music, because the music comes through you and it flows through you. And there's no consciousness there. And sometimes I'll play something and write something, and then I'll go back and look at it, and like, I don't know where this came from. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, where they will, you know, write a great poem, or they will do something wonderful, and they step back after a while and look at it, and then they don't even remember doing it. It's kind of like we tap into this energy field, this consciousness, this holographic consciousness.
Well, given this is a music station, would you have any objections to me playing a cut from Pyramids on Mars? I believe this is
from... absolutely. Please do,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a little bit different on this show, but what the heck, we're talking with a musician. Let's play some of his music. This is called Tribute from Pyramids on Mars. Tribute from Pyramids on Mars. You know, Kevin, this is the first time I've listened to this with headphones on. And I see what you're talking about. You know, you get that feeling. Kind of like out-of-body experience feeling. If you're listening,
I get that a lot from people.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that my music takes them on a journey.
Yeah. I've got to listen to more of it. You were nice enough to send me several cuts. In fact, I guess the whole CD of Echo Cosmic.
Was Echo that? Cosmic,
yeah.
Yes.
And I've got to put the headphones on and try it that way. Because it has a different texture when you listen. So if you're listening to this show, folks, you can always find it on the archives, of course. And so put the headphones on and listen to that music again, because and see if you can tell the difference between listening to through the radio, without the headphones, or with headphones on. I'm getting all excited here about this big piece of music. Anyway, I was going to mention that it was kind of odd that MUFON, you found out about MUFON's investigation the way you did. Why in the world hadn't MUFON gotten in touch with you before they just said, hey, let's put this in our presentation, you know?
I wish I'd known.
And it's awfully coincidental that you happen to be at that presentation, don't you think? Or is it coincidental? Was it meant to be?
I don't think there is any coincidence anymore.
No.
So many crazy things have happened to me.
I'm telling you.
That weekend changed my life.
That's great. There's also a, this is going to be aired first Tuesday of October. Okay, so MUFON had a symposium in California.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind for next year, though. Of course, Kevin, now is early in September. You can still make it down there.
I'll try.
Yeah. But yes. You probably have a lot on your plate, I'm sure, but at the same time... there you go.
Yeah.
And this Chris Bledsoe, I'm looking forward to seeing this movie. You don't know what the name of the movie is, or they got a working title, or?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, but he's
you wouldn't consider...
His story is quite incredible.
Would you consider putting me in touch with this guy?
I can definitely try, for sure, yes.
Or give him my contact information, let him get in touch with me, because... I'd like to have him on the show. So
okay.
Yeah.
I will definitely do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. I take it you have to run now?
I do. My phone's starting to ring.
Okay. They're saying, get out of here, okay? Okay, so
yes. Listen,
Kevin Estrella of Pyramids on Mars, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we can do this again sometime, yeah?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. I love that. Cheers. I hope you enjoyed that music. I mean, that was inspiring to me. I don't know. Like I say, try it with the headphones on and try to listen to his... go to his website, pyramidsonmars.com. And check out some of his music. And the name of his group is Pyramids on Mars. And Echo Cosmic is his latest CD. He's appearing all over the place. So, and the way he's talking, and I believe him, he's really gaining popularity. So, what do you think? You can contact me and let me know what you think. Is this inspired? I mean, people say, as to religion, you know, I was inspired by God, or Jesus inspired me, or Allah inspired me, whatever. An angel inspired me, you know. So they have religious inspirations. Why not alien inspirations? Why not other dimensional inspirations to write write music, write poetry, write a novel, or attack some political or issue, a subject like that, that, you know, and they're inspired by something. Is it just of the mind, of yours and my particular mind, or is it inspired by something else? So, thank you for joining me. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived on at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomena. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
At 89.3, this is WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, making waves. The Malt Shop is up next. Right now, it's time for the WHFR Neighborhood News from Henry Ford College's TCM 261 broadcast journalism class.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the WHFR Neighborhood News. From HFC's broadcast journalism class, I'm James Bazzi, along with
Jose Yanis.
And now, here's news from your neighborhood. Yesterday, the federal court ruled that $150,000 in kickback money will stay with the dead lawyer's family. U.S. District Judge Nancy Edmonds ruled that the money formerly surrendered as part of Ronald Zajac's conspiracy conviction will not be turned over to the city. Zajac was convicted in a bribery scheme that cost the city of Detroit $200 million, but died in July while appealing his case. The Detroit Free Press reports that the ruling comes from the abatement principle, which buries all wrongdoings with the offender.
After 2 years on trial, the involuntary manslaughter charges against 26-year-old Jonathan Sales have been dismissed. In 2013, Sales was charged with the death of 14-year-old Kier Swift, who drowned while under his watch at East Detroit High School. Sales' attorney, Robert Leonetti, said he expected